All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sick Harrison Price for Friday, March 29th, 2024, coming to you from the GoGoat Sports Studio, built by Arbor Lee here at the Iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver. If you're heading to a game or any event downtown, why not make it a staycation? Call the wall, 604-331-1000. Ask for the Sick Harrison Price rate. Some blackout dates may apply. Matt Sick Harrison alongside Irv Kafar sitting in for Blake Price this week. Grady Sass hitting switches, conducting things. Big show coming up for you. And it's all a presentation of Applewood Auto Group. We're right now at Applewood Nissan Langley, the 2023 Nissan Qashqai. You can finance from 2.99% up to 36 months. And the 2024 Nissan Leaf up to $13,000 cash back, including rebates. It's all good at Applewood. Tim Horton's poll question today, we're asking, will the Canucks get the power play fixed before the playoffs? Yes or no, you can vote at Sick Harrison Price on Twitter and YouTube. The Canucks power play, the 29th ranked unit in the National Hockey League since the All-Star break. That's 2 months now. That's a third of the season. Roll Up to Win is here from Tim Hortons on their 60th anniversary. Play on the Tim's app to win prizes, daily cash jackpot, $10,000. You can win the all-electric Volkswagen ID.4 and a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Hurry up here. Roll Up is on till March 31st. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah. Hoping for a better game last night, or at least a more exciting finish.
Yeah, and I was there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an exciting finish.
No.
You mentioned the power play and the poll question there, and my answer to that is unequivocally yes. They better get this power play fixed before the start of the playoffs. But look, there was a lot going on there in this hockey game against the Dallas Stars that, you know, we can pinpoint to the power play and the struggles of that of late. But, you know, the Canucks didn't lose that game because of the power play. They lost it for a lot of other reasons too, and I'm sure we'll definitely jump right into it. But yeah, it was an interesting night there.
Yeah, I mean, the game has slipped here.
Yep.
You know, for everything that they've done on the defensive side of the puck, and there have been a lot of good things on the defensive side of the puck since the All-Star break, really. The offense hasn't come along with it. I voted yes on the power play just because I think they have too many talented people not to figure this out, and they have 9 games left to get it figured out.
Yeah.
But I share everybody's frustration that sometimes you sit there and you look at it and you go, oh, Why is that happening? Why is this happening? Why is he there? So let's jump right into it. Let's hear from JT Miller. Let's hear from Rick Hawk, and then we'll hear from JT Miller on the power play specifically. Here's Coach on what he saw last night.
Sometimes the power play, you know, you got it. You got to get those gritty things. You know, you need three people to the net, and like too many set plays, and I think sometimes it burns us. We're trying to get guys to understand that we got to get the puck to the net. There's got to be gritty goals on power plays. It can't be pretty. That's really, you know, they got a couple tonight. But yeah, unfortunate.
He would go on to say that the power play was too mechanical. And he said, look, we're getting better looks, but now it's about scoring. Because it's one thing to get looks, it's another thing to convert. As we always say on this show, losers talk chances, winners talk goals.
Yeah.
Has it looked better to you of late, at least in terms of the chance generation?
Well, I think when you look at it from a whole, you talk about the quarterback and who's there and whatnot. This power play runs through JT Miller. I think that's very evident. And when you watch the games, Quinn Hughes, yes, he is the quarterback, but the power play goes through JT Miller. And I think teams are now starting to have the book on the Vancouver Canucks. It's you take away JT Miller and you take away his passing lanes and everything, they're probably going to leave Pia Suter open. Right, they're not scared of him. He doesn't pose a threat. You have one guy on Elias Pettersson and just taking away that shot. And really, what is there for the Vancouver Canucks? I mean, Brock Besser has feasted on the power play this season, and the guy doesn't even get shots on net on the power play. So I think that there's so much that has to go into it when you look at it from a Canucks perspective. To be completely honest, it's personnel. You got to load it up, and you got to just create chances. For so much of this season, Matt, it's making things simpler if you're the Vancouver Canucks, and what they're not doing is shooting the puck.
Which is why Coach, I think, is on this tip now.
Yeah.
Which is why Coach is messaging this now. I'm sure he's doing it in the room. He's certainly doing it with Canucks fans via the media as well, that, you know, now's not the time to get pretty, particularly if the opposition feels like they have a pretty good book on what you're trying to do, what you would prefer to do on the power play. You mentioned JT. So much of it runs through him. Here's Miller after Thursday's loss on this sagging power play.
We had a couple of looks, but honestly, I just not enough, not good enough. Not enough momentum for the group. We're not getting any loose pucks back. Just feel like we're playing slow. And, you know, they gave us a little different look than probably the pre-scout suggested today. And I just don't think we responded very well. We had a couple of looks, but we need to capitalize. We just need one right there, you know, going into the third.
I give him a lot of credit for his honesty after losses, JT Miller.
Yeah.
Like, he will tell you the reasons why, as he saw them out there. We both sort of raised an eyebrow that they got a different penalty kill look from the Dallas Stars than they were anticipating.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. You know, the cat and mouse game now begins, right? Perhaps in advance of a playoff series with some of these Western opponents. Oh, yeah, we've been doing this for most of the year on the PK, but here's what else we got in our quiver, and here's what else that we may throw at you with some degree of surprise. Yes, Pia Suter in the bumper is just not the answer there. I don't think people feel threatened by his shot. Funny that Rick Tocchet said he was more bothered by the 6-on-5 play with the goalie out last night than he was the power play, but it all added up to a 3-1 loss to the Dallas Stars. It is our top story today. Stars don't align. Canucks lose a second opportunity to clinch a berth in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They will have another opportunity on Sunday, Easter Sunday, a matinee 12:30 start at Rogers Arena against the Anaheim Ducks, wrapping up this epic 9-game road or a homestand earth. And lo and behold, like suddenly a matinee against Anaheim is kind of a big game. They would have a losing record on this homestand if they drop this game to the Ducks.
Oh, yes. The big matinee on Sunday that everyone's looking forward to. And, you know, we talked about it earlier in the week that, you know, we suggested that, you know, it's probably going to be a Artur Shilov's game. Not so fast anymore, right, Matt?
So at Rinkwide Vancouver is asking that as a poll question because Tocchet had hinted that Sunday will be an Artur Shilov start. But you lost L.A., you lost to Dallas. You're now 3 back of Dallas atop the Western Conference. And perhaps more importantly, Edmonton is only 6 points behind you with two games in hand and a head-to-head remaining on the schedule. So where are you at, Irv? Who's your goalie Sunday?
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, if you can't beat the Anaheim Ducks in front of you with Artur Shelov's in net, then there's a lot more problems than we think there is with this Vancouver Canucks hockey team. Having said that, I think that they should still go to Shelov's and you go to DeSmith in that game in Vegas. I just think that that's probably a more fair thing to do for Shelov's, who hasn't played this year in the NHL, but instead of throwing him to the Wolves right there in Vegas, who, you know, the crowd's going to be on you. It's an important game for the Vegas Golden Knights as well. So I think you go with the kid. And I think that, you know, we've also talked about it earlier in the week. You play hard for your goalie. You play even harder for your backup. But a third-string guy coming up on an emergency basis, you know you're going to have to play hard on Sunday. And you need the win.
You get everybody's attention with that guy in the goal. I'll disagree just because they have a back-to-back next week with Vegas and Arizona. So I'll say play Shelovs on the second of the back-to-back in Arizona. It's funny you mentioned the game being big for Vegas as well. The Vegas Golden Knights have crept out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. They are up to the third place playoff finisher in the Pacific Division. They lead the Kings by a point, LA with a game in hand, so that could flip-flop volley back and forward here. And, of course, we know the Vancouver Canucks are likely, well, I should say no, they are likely to finish first in the Pacific still.
Trending towards that direction. Let's say that.
Well, now three back of Dallas for the Western Conference, so it might be the conference's second seed, the winning position in the Pacific, or could be just a home ice team with the number two spot in the Pacific if Edmonton were to go on a run here and if the bottom fell out of the Canucks season in these final nine games.
How big of a loss would that be on the Canucks season if they don't win the division, Matt?
I've allowed myself to think of this now because for a while there I looked at it and went, just not likely.
Not a chance, yeah.
But the Canucks have, you know, let the Oilers play themselves back into it. I think it would be hugely dispiriting for everybody involved. For the market, for the organization, for the coaching staff, and for the players. I think it would be an absolute awful sort of last impression. You know, we're standing over the golf ball, and the second you draw the club back and you just have that negative thought that shoots through.
All the time.
I would sort of equate it to that, right? Where you've taken the club back, but you've had that, holy shoot, you know, something's not right.
Wrong.
You haven't committed. There is a lack of confidence in whatever you're about to do. I wonder if that would befall the Vancouver Canucks, if in fact they did fall from top spot in the Pacific. When did they take it over? Like, how long are we talking about? They jumped Vegas because, remember, Vegas got off to the crazy good start, right? Just like Vancouver.
Yep.
They jumped Vegas on, oh, we'll figure it out, day they got into first place.
And they didn't look back.
No, and that's it. And that's what I mean.
And they were, I want to say, like 17 points up on the next team, which was unbelievable.
Oh, they had massive cushion. Massive cushion.
We're sitting here saying that, but they're still
now. Edmonton rolled off 17 in a row, so it took something out of the regular, out of the ordinary, to even get to this spot. Okay, back on the game. Here's JT Miller. He's the lone goal scorer for the Vancouver Canucks last night. He was far more noticeable with a couple of wingers who are not typically on his flanks, and we'll get into that in a second. And yet here he is blaming himself for the loss.
I don't think we're getting to the inside enough, you know, myself. You know, I'm you know, it's not really creating or driving play right now for me. So I need to be better. And as a leader on the team, I hold myself to a higher standard than that. I mean, I feel like I'm one and done a lot.
Very admirable. One and done. I think Talk had talked about that as well, or if they're not first on loose pucks. You know, early in the season, they get an opportunity, the puck would go awry, they'd be on the puck, they'd generate a second opportunity, a third opportunity. One and done, I think, was a good phrase from JT Miller in his synopsis. Now, for the life of me, and I think I even asked you or Jeff or both of you here in the last 24 hours, because we were talking about Dakota Joshua getting a turn with Miller and Besser. That's how they practiced it.
Yep.
Typically, this coach plays the way he practices. Understandably so, especially with a player coming back from an 18-game absence who hadn't really played on that line much before. So put him together at a practice, you think, Joshua's getting this plum assignment. Good real estate in his first game back. Legs should be fresh. He's been skating the entire time, right? It's a hand injury. Mm-hmm. And then they open the game, and Miller's with Archie Baines and Sam Lafferty. Joshua's back on his usual trio with Bluger and Garland, and I think we all knew Tockett was going to go back to that line at some point. And then there's Nils Höglander and Brock Besser flanking Elias Pettersson with Podkolzin and Mikheyev, the two Russians with Pius Suter. I can't for the life of me understand why he went that way.
I think the happiest person that it should have been was Elias Pettersson, to be completely honest. He gets, you know, he's playing with his buddy again, and then he gets Brock Besser, who's the guy that's probably going to get to 40 goals this year. But I'm of the mind where, you know, you get Dakota Joshua back, but maybe I think it's a feel safe thing or trusting your players and in different situations. You know that you're what you're probably going to get out of that line because they had that chemistry. They knew they were going to be good. I think it was more putting Archie Baines in a position to succeed with JT Miller as up the lineup mm-hmm. as opposed to having him play in the bottom six forward group.
Well, and that's fine, but I think you could have still done that with Besser on the other wing. Like, there were so many things that surprised me about this. Number one, that you would split up Miller and Besser. I should say number one, that you practiced it entirely differently. Number two, that you split up Miller and Besser. I completely understand wanting to see Besser with Pettersson and Höglander because I think, you know, that has the makings of a decent trio. But yeah, he hasn't thrown us, Rick Tockett, many curveballs with his forward arrangements this year. We've had a pretty good book, and maybe it's that. Maybe he just felt like Dallas knew what was coming, so we're going to show you something entirely different, and maybe we screw up your pre-scout, much like the Stars did with the Canucks and their different penalty-killing arrangements. So, anyways, we'll see how they line it up. We'll see how they line it up on Sunday against the Anaheim Ducks. Saw a lot of complaining about officiating last night on Twitter, on the timeline, surrounding the game.
Yeah.
I'll just ask you plainly, what did you make of the officiating? Did you understand some of the complaints?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a Canucks fan right now, you're looking at everything and clutching and grabbing because the team's not playing well, so you're going to blame it on the refs, which you have a point in some cases, but, you know, the Robertson high stick, you watch it 100 times. If they don't have enough conclusive evidence, they're not going to turn it over. And that happens night in and night out in the NHL. The yep. NHL officials aren't looking for Teddy Bluger to high stick Wyatt Johnson in front of the net and take a 2-minute penalty with 3 minutes left in the hockey game.
No.
They're not doing that. So you can have your beef with the officials, and there can be all the conspiracy theories that Bettman doesn't want this, that, and the other to Canucks to go far. The Canucks shoot themselves in the foot a lot of times. Yes, the officiating does have some bad calls, and they do around the National Hockey League, but yesterday wasn't on the officials.
I saw many different people drawing many different lines in terms of Jason Robertson's shoulders
yes.
and the puck and where the stick contacted the puck. I'm with you.
Yep.
To me, it was inconclusive. To me, it was one of those where the call on the ice has to stand.
100%.
I didn't see enough there to overturn the call on it, in part because I think maybe, you know, it was below one shoulder and above the other, whatever the case may be. I saw people screaming bloody murder about the Dakota Joshua play with Miro Heiskanen by the boards. At first blush, it looked to me like he caught an edge. And we watched it again this morning, Irf. And, yeah, he had toe pick there.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact Joshua said, no, it's on me in the post game.
Well, that was the thing. And I think Heiskanen knew, too. Like, there wasn't much of a reaction from Joshua's teammates as well, either. And Heiskanen kind of not want to say stood over him in a sense that I hate you kind of thing, but it was like, oh man, are you okay? Because you fell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it was, to be completely honest. Now, it looked awful,
yep.
right? There's a reason why from the Canucks bench angle, and Tockett was probably pissed when they saw it happen in real time. You slow it right down, Matt. He kind of loses an edge.
No, slow it right down, and it is what it appeared.
He
missed he caught a pick.
Yep.
He went tumbling down. You're right. The body language of him, Heiskanen, and the other players on the ice seemed to realize what had gone on.
Even the official that was right there.
No, and you're so right about referees usually swallowing whistles in the final few minutes. So, you know, more often than not, particularly if your team is trailing, you're not going to be called for much unless it's a clear penalty. I'm with you. There have been nights this year where we've been all over the officials. There have been nights this year where I think the guys in stripes, not to mention the league office, with that horrible check to the head that they missed a few weeks back, or at least didn't discipline, have been against the Canucks. And the fan base in the club has had good right to scream bloody murder about it. I didn't necessarily think last night's game rose to that level, but Grady, you did? Maybe not.
What was that? You caught me at a bad time.
No, sorry. You were messaging me about officiating last night. Did you think last night was one of those where the refs may have made it harder for the Canucks to win? Like, is last night on the officials for you?
At first reaction, you want to inherently blame it, but looking at the replays again and watching what the Canucks didn't do on their power play, Canucks shot themselves in the foot. If they're getting those penalty calls, no guaranteeing with a lack of puck movement, with a lack of execution, they're even going to do anything on those power plays. So, listen, there's times where you can blame the officiating for calls, bad calls, 100% true. But if you're constantly resorting to blaming the officiating when you, without looking in the mirror first, then you got to have some inner self-responsibility.
You have softened since last night, brother.
Yeah.
Last night, he was...
And this morning.
Was I?
Last night and this morning, he was breathing fire. Yeah. He was breathing fire on this game about officiating. He was breathing fire on the power play.
I said the market was hot on it, and I wanted... We were going to ask a poll question. Should the refs be held accountable and have to meet with the media post-game to explain their calls, which will never happen, by the way, in Gary Bettman's world, like they do in the NBA.
Yeah, well, every other sport now will do that with you.
But is there another sport that protects the officials as much as the NHL protects their refs?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
They can't even have social media accounts. Like,
part of the problem with the National Hockey League is the lack of transparency, and frankly, I think it's got to change here. As we move deeper into a world where so much is being gambled on. But you were hot about officiating. You were hot about the power play, so much so, Irv, that he went and did the math.
Yes.
Did you see his tweet?
I did see the tweet.
The 17 games.
Hold on.
The 17 games from October 11th to November 16th, 33% was third in the NHL. The 32 games from November 17th to January 27th, 19.2, but that was mid-pack, 16th. Mm-hmm. And then from January 28th, All-Star Game, to now 24 games, 14.5%, 28th in the National Hockey League.
The last 2 months, they haven't been good. And obviously here with Jeff, he's saying, you know, Besser, 3 power play goals. Elias Lindholm still now tied for second, and he got that in his debut. Look, I think it is just as simple as getting pucks to the net and all of that, but it's being creative. If you're going to let Quinn Hughes be that guy that walks the line and skates around and beats guys like he has this entire season, really all of his career, you got to get bodies to the net. Pia Suter in the bumper is not getting to the net. If it's a big ball, if it's Dakota Joshua, if it's Elias Lindholm, if it's Vasily Podkolzin that people have been screaming about as well, that want to put those bodies in and get them, you know, in front of the net, then go ahead and do it. But to be completely honest, this power play is not going to change if your quarterback is JT Miller and they completely take that away. Every game.
Yeah. I want to see a little bit more Quinn Hughes.
And what happened to Elias Pettersson's one-timer?
I think
that it's non-existent anymore.
But Grady, I think because they're cheating that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teams are taking it away.
This happened last year, too, with Elias and that bomb. It went absolutely quiet for 6 weeks or so. People said, what's the matter? And you know, coach just told us, look, they're anticipating that. That's what they've decided to take away.
Well, Suter's not a shooting threat, so
that's
you can kind of hone in on him a bit and you know, allow him to take those shots and focus in on the other guys, rather. So,
Archdeep Baines, back up from the American Hockey League and the Abbotsford Canucks, the second tour of duty with the NHL team for the Surrey native, drew some penalties.
Yep.
Put it this way. He's up to, what, 6 games now?
Yeah.
I think his best game was his first game when he could have easily had a couple of goals and been in on a couple of goals. In fact, was snake bitten not to get on the score sheet. I thought his first game was his best game. I thought he went quieter as the week went along there and as he played more. Was yesterday his second best game?
Yeah.
In the NHL? Could you make that case?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the lineup decision and where he played in the lineup, right? He's played up, played with JT Miller, a guy that's been hot all season long and then probably one of the Canucks' best players this season. Drew a couple penalties, lost a couple puck battles along the boards, but that's going to happen. You know, you're playing against some pretty good defensemen in Chris Tanev and obviously Miro Heiskanen and Esa Lindell and everyone else that they do have there. I thought he was okay. You know, I think that he's going to get some more opportunity here as we move forward. Is he better than Phil DiGiuseppe? You know, in some cases, he might be. Keeps coming in that lineup. Is he better than Nils Lehmann? I'm not sure, but I think in the role, it's different. Because it depends on where you want to play him in the lineup. So if you're playing Nils Lehmann, you know he's going to be a third or fourth line guy.
Yeah. The difference for me is Lehmann can play the middle and is a guy who's going to kill penalties. DiGiuseppe and Baines for me might be, as you alluded to, depending on the opponent and how you want to match up.
Yeah.
I can see him wanting DiGiuseppe in there for sort of physical, more
bigger teams,
heavier games. Arshdeep, he's got the 6 penalty minutes in 6 games. He's -3. He's got 4 shots on goal. He's got a block shot, playing 12 and a half minutes. I do think the coaching staff really likes him. I think they're hoping he's the hero on the wing that this team just so desperately needs. In fact, and we'll put this to J-Pat later in the show, but if you had to pick one of their winger group who's going to break out from here and be a part of the solution in terms of the secondary scoring that we've been talking about and or fixing the power play, but at the very least just more production, who are you looking at? Who would you red circle of the winger group who you think is got a chance to bust out here, be productive, and help the overall team scoring?
Well, I think it's opportunity, and Arshdeep's going to get that, right? I really think he is. He's going to get a chance to play with good players to move up in the lineup. I'm not sure that Vasily Podkolzin will. I'm not sure that he will get that opportunity because he's relied upon and he plays that heavier game, that, you know, that bottom six type of game where he goes out, he's tough on pucks, he hits people, and that's kind of where they view him at. I really do believe PDG's just been too up and down the lineup, to be honest. Like, he does, I don't know, to be completely honest, I think you ask him, he's going to say, well, sometimes I'm playing with really good players and sometimes I'm on the fourth line, so I got to change my role every single game. And I'll credit to him because he's that versatile moving up and down the lineup,
and he's going to have to be that guy. Or
yeah,
I mean, in his position, he doesn't have a lot of equity built up to be demanding anything. He's going to have to be a bit of that versatility club for Rick Tocchet. That's why I was so excited to see Joshua with Miller and Besser last night. I thought, okay, here we go. Maybe this is the guy who, on that wing, if he can play the way he did with Bluger and Garland, then, wow, now you're cooking here with what you got at with JT Miller down the middle creating, and with Brock Besser, of course. And we know Brock can shoot the puck and is a good goal scorer. Anyways, I'd like to see that line at some point because I do wonder if Joshua is your best hope amongst this winger group to really step it up and help the scoring, the secondary scoring, whatever you want to call it, even if it's not on the power play. Yesterday we talked about playoff tickets, Irf.
Yes.
And we're starting to see some prices filter in on the secondary market. What are you seeing there?
Oh, absolutely. I think the presale code, you could have entered it if you registered and gone on today, and you're looking at about $308 to get into the building, over $300 and for an upper bowl seat. And lower bowl, about $450 for a decent lower bowl seat. And look, you know that playoff tickets were going to be high. You know that season tickets next year are going to be raised. It's just what hockey teams do. I don't think anyone, when they're thinking about business opportunity across the board, when a team's doing successful, is going to go about, okay, well, we need to please the fan base because this, that, and the other. No, they're trying to make money. That's all it is. And the thing is, the Canucks can charge those prices because people will pay. Right? And that's the biggest thing.
That's it. I mean, I think a confluence of factors is at play here that has to be recognized. And look, I will start it all off by saying, you know, it's too bad that hockey has gotten unaffordable for many or most families. I think that the face prices are like $200 as a get in. That's the secondary market we're looking at.
No, that's
at.
On that's off the
that's the face. That's the face. Off okay,
of,
so 300
Canucks presale. Yeah.
Well, look, that's awfully high. We have not had the Stanley Cup playoffs here in 9 years. This is an event town. This is a Canucks town. This is a team that has been first place. So I can understand why they're – and you're absolutely right, Irf. I mean, they are going to go like hotcakes. Like, this is a wealthy market, and many people want to be on this train. So that's the market forces at play here. Spit out get-in prices of $300-plus dollars. Don't love it, but I completely understand it.
Yeah, and I think that, look, playoffs in this city, I mean, everyone that's watched this team or been around and covered this team, this city's electric. Oh. It absolutely is. The building's always a-buzzing if you're in it, around it, the areas, the surrounding restaurants and businesses, all the local businesses. Everyone thrives when this team is doing well. Now, are people taking advantage by raising ticket prices? I don't think so, because I do think that if you look around the league in some other markets, Vegas Golden Knights tickets aren't cheap. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs to playoff tickets aren't cheap. You look, if the Montreal Canadiens were ever to make the playoffs, when they do, those tickets are absolutely crazy. The Edmonton Oilers playoff tickets are not cheap at all at that new building either. So it's kind of the way things go. But, yeah, lofty ticket here, especially the way the economy is now.
Yeah. In fact, Golden Knights tickets are a little bit down. You can get a
decent
deal.
No, this year they're down. Yeah, last year they're
wild. Oh, yeah. Oh, for course. Yeah. You can get a decent deal on the secondary market there in Vegas. Now that, you know, they've – it's funny, we were in Vegas last weekend, Irf.
Yes.
We went pretty much straight from the airport to the hotel, dropped the bags, and then to the Springsteen concert at T-Mobile. And we walked in. And the first thing I do whenever I enter a building is I check the rafters because, I like to see that sort of – it kind of tells the story of the building history. Right? Who's played there, retired numbers, team success. And I spotted it. And I said to her, whatever you do, do not look up and to the left. She said, why? Because they've got something hanging up there that we don't have.
Yeah.
And it's such a damn shame. Anyways, Canucks prospects. Let's get to a couple of them. We've been talking about several of them, of course, with Jonathan Lekkerimäki and Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, coming over from Sweden to join the Abbotsford Canucks. We talked about some of the Canucks prospects whose seasons have now wrapped up, and Lucas Forsell, the Swedish forward, Sauter Minio, the defenseman with the Seattle Thunderbirds, are about that. And we've even talked about a couple of the Canucks prospects that are still going in the CHL playoffs, Kirill Kudryavtsev, namely the defenseman with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds of the Ontario Hockey League. But let's cast our eye south of the border here now to a couple of the NCAA prospects. Mm-hmm. Tom Wielander, 2-point game, +3, as Boston University advances to the second round of the Frozen Four tournament with a 6-3 victory over RIT. That game notable because Macklin Celebrini, Vancouver's Macklin Celebrini, who stands to be the first pick in the 2024 NHL entry draft. In fact, I think it's just about a lock now.
It's a shoo-in.
Yeah.
Now it's who's going to get him.
I know there have been some drafts where we've kind of wondered, you know, amongst several guys. This may not be a Connor Bedard lock, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Celebrini scores his 32nd goal of the season to break the all-time record for a U18 player in NCAA hockey. Craig Simpson, back at Michigan State nearly 40 years ago. So that's a 40-year-old record that Macklin Celebrini broke in the victory that advances them to quite an interesting matchup here. I mean, when you think college hockey in the United States, the Boston University Terriers, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, I mean, those are two of the big dogs. So we're going to see Minnesota and Boston in the next round. That goes on Saturday. Now, the Canucks had another NCAA prospect in action on Thursday. That's Omaha's Ty Mueller, a centerman they took in the fourth round this past year, or was it the year before? Anyways, he nets a goal, but Omaha is not able to win. They fall to the aforementioned Minnesota Golden Gophers. So Mueller ends his season, and he's an Alberta guy, played in the AJHL, and it was the fourth round this past year. He ends his junior season at the University of Nebraska-Omaha with 11 goals, 26 points in 40 games. So a decent season. There was a lot of people who looked at this 2023 draft for the Canucks and went, not sure I know, understand this guy. This guy could have been had later, so on. But, hey, Wielander had a good season. Brstevich had an incredible season, So much so that he became a centerpiece of a deal. Minio had a good season. Vilmer Ulriksson, the big Swedish winger, actually had a pretty good season, too. He's in the OHL playoffs alongside Kudryavtsev for the Guelph Storm, coming off a 33-point season, 6'6". I mean, the guy's like a pterodactyl out there. Coming over to North America in the CHL after being at Djurgårdens last year in the Swedish League. So, hey, you got to hand it to the Canucks. And, of course, Aiden Celebrini, Macklin's brother, is on that Boston University team as well. That's advancing. So I think you got to hand it to the Canucks here. The amateur scouting has gotten a little better here. You've got a few better hope bets in the system than you had before.
No, Absolutely. I think, and then when you look at it, it's getting these guys in their next step of development, right? Like, some of these guys are eating at the college level and playing really, really well. Now, when they get to the American Hockey League level, let's see how they react. So that's why it's a big couple of weeks for Jonathan Lekkerimäki here, just to see what it's like to practice in this environment, to be in a professional environment. You know, some of these guys that go to these top-end schools, yes, you are getting that professional level, but it's a lot different when you're kind of make those tries, is trying to make the leap to the NHL.
Yeah. Playing more games and, of course, more practices at the American Hockey League level. And you're right. And, hey, Atu Ratu's doing pretty good down there on the farm as well. In fact, I do wonder whether we get a sneak peek at Ratu at some point here over the next 9 games before the season ends, because he did play games last year for the Islanders and for the Vancouver Canucks. Let's get to today's menu. It's brought to you by Greta. Fantastic spot to go before the game, after the game. Check out the games there throughout the season. It's a quick walk to the rink or stadium, a go-to spot for food, drinks, and fun. Make it a game night at Greta, 50 West Cordova, or at GretaBar.com. We'll talk to J-Pat here. We'll talk to him about all the topics stemming out of last night's Thursday's loss to the Dallas Stars, his concern level right now with the way the team is playing, his concern level given the Edmonton Oilers are once again biting at heels on this power play, on who should be the starting goaltender on Sunday, on the Canucks' lack of discipline, because that has started to wane a little bit here. You know, whether this is just the dog days and the Canucks are feeling it, or whether this is real. And we'll also ask him the question, sorry, did I ask you, Murph, of these wingers and who needs to step up, who is more likely to step up in what's left of the season, give them a little bit more confidence that they are going to get the production necessary going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll do some hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter, a major league record for a Maple Ridge native last night. And we'll go to the people, and we'll hear from you folks on all sorts of Vancouver Canucks-related topics. Sir Harrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group. Right now at Applewood GM, Port Hardy, the 2024 Sierra 1500. Get up to $6,500 cash purchase credit or finance from 0%. And that's for up to 60 months. All good. At Applewood. Poll question today. Tim Horton's poll question. Will the Canucks get the power play fix before the playoffs? Yes or no can vote at Sir Harrison Price on Twitter or YouTube. Speaking of Twitter, hashtags the best and worst of Twitter. .com. Irf, I'm going to get us let off here.
Yep.
On baseball's opening day, in a pair of British Columbians who made it this year. Well, Tyler O'Neill has made it every year for many years. And at H. Samura, Howard Samura, of course, longtime chronicler of amateur athletics in our province. Major League Baseball history tonight for Maple Ridge's Tyler O'Neill, the province's 2013 head of the class alum, with a fifth straight opening day home run. It is a major league record that he owns on his own now. Previously had shared it with Yogi Berra, Gary Carter, and Todd Hundley. Like a who's who of hitting catchers at one point. So five in a row, congrats to Tyler. We've had him on the show numerous times. And then at Ben Lipka out in Abbotsford, the Abbey News, Abbotsford's Cade Smith makes the opening day roster for Cleveland. We were looking at that. He was tight down the stretch there to our roster spot. Good on him. Didn't pitch yesterday for the Guardians. I suspect you'll see him as soon as their second game. Congrats to Cade Smith and Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, good for Tyler O'Neill. I mean, guy from these parts has always been, you know, good with the media. You mentioned you have him on your show. He's a good dude.
He's a really good player, too. I mean, he's an elite defensive outfielder.
In the year in 2021, he had 34 home runs.
No, he can, he's a, I mean, son of a bodybuilder. Yeah. So he can hit the ball. He runs well. No, there's a lot of things to like about Tyler. And I'm sure he had some friends and family
last
night at T-Mobile down the I-5. Of course, now playing for Boston all those years in St. Louis. And once upon a time, an M's prospect.
Not an easy ballpark to hit home runs out
of. No, it isn't. Not in April either.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is some a J. Should have been a J.
Cold. That is some cold air.
He's absolutely yoked. At
why do you say he should have been a J?
More Canadians.
Oh.
Oh, God, Canada's team. I don't even want to start that conversation. SportsCenter, at SportsCenter for me, UConn has only trailed Matt for 28 seconds in the men's tournament.
This is extraordinary.
Also, their margin of victory on an average this tournament is 28.7 points.
We used to read stats like this about their women's program.
Yes,
remember when
I remember.
Their women's program was absolutely dominating the field? But I have never seen a school sweep through an NCAA tournament as easily as UConn did last year en route to the championship. And they're halfway home this year and have not been tested. I mean, Northwestern, San Diego State, this was a rematch of last year's final. They didn't belong on the floor with UConn. So we'll see how they do here at the Elite Eight. You would have to think at some point they're going to get a game here. But so far, they've been best in class by a mile.
Yeah, it's wild. They're plus 110 to win it, so you double your money just by taking this, risking a little bit there for them to win
the
tournament.
They got Illinois now. Illinois can score, but we'll see. At CF underscore depth charts, cap friendly depth charts. Jeff Skinner, three games away from his 1,000th NHL regular season game. Skinner has never played in the playoffs. This is astonishing.
It's unbelievable.
A first-round pick of the Carolina Hurricanes, seventh overall in 2010. He spends 8 years in Carolina, does not go to the playoffs, leaves the moment they get good for Buffalo, who, of course, are on the longest playoff drought in the NHL. Six seasons now with Buffalo. He's not going to the playoffs this year either, but we'll get to celebrate his 1,000th game before the end of the year, before the end of the season.
It's insane. I mean, he's also, if you look at his photo, he hasn't aged a day.
No, he
you
hasn't.
You think not making the playoffs after 1,000 games would age you a little bit, Matt.
He was 82 points last year, so a point-per-game player. He actually played in 79, so a little bit better. He's got a 40-goal season on his resume. He's got, what, six or seven 30-goal seasons?
Yeah.
Five? He's been an excellent player. 669 points in his NHL career. 357 goals. Not a single solitary Stanley Cup playoff game.
Which is even more wild. But you look at, like, you mentioned the bad teams that he's been on. Almost 1,000 games, 997. Scores all these goals, seasons of 40, like you said, 35, 33. He's minus 130 on his career. So as much as he's been on the ice, he's been on some terrible teams.
There are some pretty big dashes there if you look at his yearly plus minus.
At Pro Football Talk for me, Michael Penix Jr. expected to visit the Steelers, Raiders, and Falcons. The Raiders hold the 13th overall pick and the Falcons 8. And I say this because Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington had himself pro day in Seattle.
Sure did.
Ran a sub 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't run. Declined to run it again. He didn't want to. He's like, nah, hey, I'm one and done.
You post a sub 4.5. I'm good.
On a knees. On we all know the knee issues that he's
I'm
had.
I'm good. Yeah. I mean, poor guy had a season end by injury, what, 5 times in his career?
Yeah, and his shoulder's a little wonky, too. So
the medical evaluation's going to be everything there, Irf. Like, yep. If there are teams that are just comfortable with the medicals and say all the problems of the past, we don't have to worry about them going forward, I think you could see him in the first round. If the medicals are troublesome, then I think you're more looking at the second round. Lefty, too, some people will hold that against him, but what an extraordinary season for the University of Washington, and good to see him rock his pro day as well, and good to see him participate.
Yeah,
at his pro day,
I think that's the biggest.
Some of
thing.
These top guys don't even want to.
They don't want to do anything.
I know.
Lefty
at BC Lions. We told you, folks. We reminded you on this twice because we knew the stakes there at Royal Athletic Park in Victoria, and that is. It just doesn't have the seating capacity of BC Place, and there is high demand for Touchdown Pacific. As the Lions tweet, well, that was fast. Way to go, CFL fans. Tickets to Touchdown Pacific officially sold out in less than an hour. See you in Victoria. This is the Saturday of Labor Day against the Ottawa Redblacks. The evolution of Touchdown Atlantic, as the CFL held a number of games in Atlanta, Canada for a number of years. They're bringing that festival and spectacle out to Victoria, and Touchdown Pacific has sold on out. I know a lot of Lions fans on the island go, hey, giddy up, right here in my backyard.
I gotta
need to get on a ferry.
Yeah, I got to give Amar Doman and his staff a lot of credit for what he's done with that organization. And you know, the having the concerts and then the beer garden outside before the game and just everything mm-hmm. to and obviously winning does help, and the Lions have had some success under the new ownership group. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be an exciting event out there in Victoria, and good for the people of Victoria and the island being able to go out there.
The other thing I like about it seems like everything is building with this team towards this year's Grey
yes.
Cup at home. And of course, the last time they won the Grey Cup, it was
at home.
Right here at BC Place.
Final one for me. I'll end on a good note. At Bleacher Report Ice, Humboldt Broncos bus crash survivor Jacob Wasserman qualifies for the 2024 Paralympic Games, Matt, in rowing.
What a fantastic story.
It's an unbelievable story.
Good for him.
Yeah. I remember it was an all-star game I covered, and you know, a lot of them were all back and reunited, and they brought them all on stage there in Vegas, and mm-hmm. you're just seeing those guys be able to go back together. And he was one of them that said that, you know, I'm going to continue to try and be a professional athlete there, and he's well on his way.
Well done.
Yeah.
And that's hashtags for today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah.
Joining us now, Jeff Patterson of Rinkwide Vancouver, covered the loss to the Dallas Stars last night. He'll be back at it Sunday, and matinee Sunday against the Anaheim Ducks. Jeff, how are we doing?
Well, I see that the pilot has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign here for the final handful of games of Vancouver. It's like a little bumpy. There's some turbulence in the air here as they've scuffled their way to the end of the homestand and obviously invited the Oilers back into this discussion about top spot in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, so what's your concern level there? I mean, oh, Edmonton, go ahead.
It's huge. You got to score some goals. Like, hey, you can say defense wins championships, but you can't win games 0-0 and ask the Dallas Stars of 2007 how that worked when they had the three shutouts against the Canucks but ended up losing in seven games because they just couldn't score enough goals on Roberto Luongo. So there's still time. I mean, I keep coming back to that. There's time for Lindholm to maybe get healthy. There's time to rest up Thatcher Demko. There is time to sort through some of these issues, but my goodness, these last couple of games against good quality teams that are going to be there in the playoffs as well, it leaves you wondering where exactly has the offense gone for the Vancouver Canucks.
You mentioned can't score goals. Now, 5-on-5, we can definitely see that. Obviously, JT Miller having to play with who he had to play with yesterday, Archdeep Baines and Sam Lafferty. But, Jeff, let's, you know, see the writing on the wall here and the power play and its troubles and its continued troubles. What's the level of concern, obviously, in these parts and for people covering the team is huge. What don't you like about the Canucks power play right now?
Well, I don't like the attitude of the players and even the coach who continues, and maybe this is just the psyche of pro athletes, but they refuse to see this as an issue. They keep saying that it's not a big deal, that things ebb and flow. But sorry, when you're 29th in the NHL over basically a third of the season, that's an issue. And, you know, one thing that's not getting talked about enough, guys, is Brock Besser doesn't have a power play goal this month. Like, forget the homestand. Extend that beyond to the three-game road trip that started the month here. Leads the Canucks with 15 power play goals on the season. And this is more of an indictment of the players around Brock Besser. We know that Brock doesn't create on his own. Brock is at his best when he's in concert with others. He needs the puck in scoring areas. Well, Brock's established himself. He's had a really good season, 37 goals, 15 on the power play. And we've talked about this notion of him being one of the better net front guys in the NHL this year with tips and screens and rebounds. And what that tells me is that pucks are not getting funneled to the front of the net for Brock Besser to do what he does best. So, yeah, you look and you say 11 games without a power play goal for Brock Besser. How can that make sense? Well, it makes sense because they're not getting pucks anywhere close to the net. They had 6 minutes of power play time against the Stars and managed four shots on goal. Like, think about that. 6 minutes with the man advantage. Most of it spent in the offensive end. Obviously, you have to do the odd retrieval. But 6 minutes of power play time, and you can only get four pucks to the front of the net. And I can't even really even remember quality scoring chances or really even many good looks with the man advantage. So if it's going back to the drawing board, I think what's worked for you this season, well, Brock Besser has worked well on the power play. Figure out a way to get him involved here over these final few games of the season.
Well, then we'll ask you the Tim Hortons poll question, Jeff. Will they get it fixed by the playoffs? And I'd also like to expand on what Tocchet said this week about why Nils Höglander hasn't gotten a shot there.
Do I have confidence? No, because I've watched them bang their head against the wall and continue to trot out the same looks, essentially. Look, I don't want to dump on Pia Suter, but he's not the answer. And it's not really his fault. He's being asked to do more than could possibly have been expected of him. But as that left shot bumper option, he's not the guy. And you've seen a few times, and look, Jamie Benn, he was the bumper option for the Dallas Stars. Bang, bang, back of the net. Again, Pia Suter is doing what's being asked of him, and he's, you know, the coach taps him on the shoulder. You're going to go play, but not a lot of finish there. He has one goal in his last 25 games, by the way, and it came at even strength. So he hasn't scored on the power play in a long time, and that goes for a lot of these guys, obviously, just four goals on the power play this month. So, you know, I have said I don't know the downside of trying Nils Höglander in that spot. And yet Rick Tocchet was asked point blank about it after the morning skate on Thursday by Farhan. And Tocchet, he started down this road of, well, we tried Höglander on PP2 on the left half wall, and there have been a couple of, and then he stopped and he changed course and he didn't really finish his sentence. But it was pretty clear that there were a couple of instances that they didn't like what they saw. But nobody's asking Nils Höglander to be the half wall guy. If it's about hammering pucks from the bumper, I just don't see the downside of trying it. If it doesn't work, then look for plan Well, it wouldn't be plan B by then.
We'll
do our alphabet here. But I just think it's time. Like, the four guys that they've got, they're going to stay out there. And then it's a question of finding that fifth. And I still think there is a little bit of time here to audition. But yeah, I mean, Tocchet then went on to say that, look, too many people in this market are trying to press Hoglander into positions that he's maybe not ready for. I thought a pretty throaty defense of the Canucks stance where Tocchet said, like, we think we're handling this guy properly. But he does have 22 goals on the season. He knows where the net is. If it comes to puck retrieval, he wins his fair share of battles. And if it's about getting greasy and heading for a loose puck that's lying in the blue paint, you know, I think Nils Höglander could be your guy as well. So I don't see the downside. And that's, you know, if they're not willing to experiment and try and sort of broaden their horizons, then no, I don't have a ton of confidence that they're going to get this corrected. And ultimately, we could be looking at the downfall of what was a once high-scoring Vancouver Canucks team when the playoffs begin next month.
What do we think the chances are they're going to have an assistant on the bench next year with power play responsibilities? Because the head coach is still handling things, right, Jeff? Is that not the way they've got it set up, that it's Rick Tocchet and JT Miller?
Yeah,
and
I don't think it matters where the assistant is. This team has more assistant coaches on the ice than I've ever seen in my time covering the Vancouver. Like, they have 8 coaches out on the ice sometimes, which is incredible. I've seen other people that cover the NHL come to town, and they remark. I see it in social, or the Canucks have 8 coaches on the ice. This is wild. I mean, it looked like a football team, and look, maybe hockey's been slow on the uptake in that regard. I don't think it matters where the coach is positioned. The work is done in the video room. It's done on the practice ice, and then ultimately it does come down to execution, and it's wild that a 90-point guy in JT Miller and a couple of 80-point guys in Patterson and Hughes and a near 40-goal scorer in Brock Besser can just be this ineffective right now working with the power play.
Yeah. So it's going to be like the NBA where you have that second bench of coaches behind the actual bench. Oh, we're going to have to tell Francesco those first row seats, the coaches are coming for them.
Of those 8 guys on the ice as well, I mean, there's a lot of them that had some success on the power play. So you'd think that this one would be a lot better. Jeff, I want to ask you, Dakota Joshua skated with JT Miller and Brock Besser in practice. Come game time, they reunite that third line. Were you surprised to see that, or was it more of a case of you had to put JT Miller, just the way the centers worked, with a guy like Archdeep Baines because you didn't want to bury him down the lineup?
Yeah, I think there was some of that, Irv. But look, I was surprised. Not surprised that Rick Tocchet would get back to Bluger, Garland, and Joshua at some point, but here's Dakota Joshua. He's been out for 6 weeks, and you practice him one day with JT Miller and Brock Besser, and then you plug them back in hoping that that chemistry is going to automatically and magically reappear. And Joshua was fine. Like, he was physical. He didn't look out of place. Didn't look like he had missed a lot of time. But yeah, when they warmed up, and I thought, oh my goodness, the heavy lifting that you're asking JT Miller with Lafferty and Baines. And look, Archdeep drew a couple of penalties. I thought the speed was there. I thought he looked a little more comfortable than he did in the first go round. But that said, he's one of 12 forwards out there and certainly wasn't expecting a lot of offense from him. And unfortunately right now, that holds true for so many of them. And for a guy like Elias Pettersson, I'm not sure that he's had a better set of wingers all season long than Brock Besser on one side and his buddy Nils Höglander on the other. Now, Petey somehow finished the night, according to the stat sheet, with 11 shot attempts, which was mind-boggling to me because he had the 4-on-4 chance where he was set up by Garland in the first period, and that was about as noticeable as I recall, other than him doing the big snow angel on the Dallas first goal. So I really was surprised that he and Hughes combined for 21 shot attempts in the hockey game. But there's got to be a bottom line. And you can't, for the longest time there, when Pettersson was carrying Ilya Mikheyev, it was sort of understandable. But he had Besser, the leading goal scorer, and Höglander, who has been one of their better finishers, certainly in the second half of the season. And that line had to do something and ultimately was unable to help the cause last night.
A lot of fans screaming about officiating last night, Jeff. What's your take there?
Boy, I have watched the replay of Jason Robertson batting that puck 100 times. And honestly, he's sort of leaning. Is the puck above his one shoulder? Yes. Is it above the other shoulder? I'm not so sure. Like, that one felt like a 50-50. And I did think the longer it went, and it was a lengthy delay in arena, I kind of thought they would find an angle that would help the Canucks in that one. And so I was a little surprised, I suppose. You know, there were some other things along the way. Dakota Joshua got tangled up with Miro Heiskanen in the third period there. Certainly looked like contact before the puck arrived on the part of the Stars defenseman. Joshua, after the game, downplayed it, said we kind of tangled skates, and he wasn't really pushing for a penalty there. Whatever the case, like, I mean, we hear the, you know, the ref suck chant all the time at Rogers Arena when your team's on the wrong end of the scoreline. I get the growly fans, but to me, it tracks back to three power plays, four shots on goal, no goals, and Dallas scored twice on the power play. So, you know, the Canucks a little undisciplined with some of the penalties. Obviously, Teddy Bluger, he gets the stick up late in the game. Like, to me, that one was a call, and you needed a kill, and they couldn't get it in that moment. So the Canucks took four power plays, and the coach's challenge cost them a fifth one. So officially, Dallas went 2 for 5 on the night with the man advantage. But to me, the Canucks had three power plays. That was enough. It wasn't like the power plays were 5-1 or 5-0. The Canucks had opportunities and just did nothing with them.
I feel like those undisciplined plays that Rick Tocchet talks about are now becoming something that he talks about post-game all the time with the Canucks here.
A little bit, you know, a month ago all the time, and then they got better out on that road trip, and we all applauded them. That was a part of their success. Stay out of the box, don't give power plays, and look what they did, those wins in Los Angeles and Vegas, and then came home and spanked Winnipeg. But yes, it's kind of crept back into their game a little bit here, and so something to monitor, something to watch, and talked about, you know, when you're not moving your feet, you're step behind, you're putting the hands and the sticks on guys. I think there was an element of that. Canucks need to play on their toes a little bit more here. And part of that, I mean, their fabric all season has been get the lead and extend it, fell behind against Los Angeles and couldn't punch their way out of that blanket. And again, you know, fell behind. I thought when they tied it at 1, I kind of thought, there you go. Like, that's your entry point. The crowd's into it. You've broken through. I thought they would harness the energy in the building and momentum, and obviously it didn't happen. They had a few chances in that second period, but yeah, I mean, discipline's going to be key. You know, if you take a couple penalties in a game, obviously you help your, you know, you're not leaning on the same guys to do the penalty killing. You get everybody involved. Again, I think that was a big part of that road trip at the start of the month, was rolling four lines, getting everybody into the hockey game, all those types of things. And the more penalties you take, the more you're leaning on a select group. And let's be honest, guys, I think they could have used Elias Lindholm in their lineup, killing as many penalties, the face-off prowess, all that kind of stuff. So he's not available to them right now. You got to push on. But all of a sudden, Sunday's game against Anaheim takes on some significance now. If they lose to the Ducks, who play in Edmonton on Saturday afternoon, it'll be 3-4, 4-6 for the Ducks at the end of a long line on the road this week. Guys, if they lose to Anaheim, they will be under 500 on this homestand.
I know.
A chance to absolutely put the hammer down and lock up everything available to them. So suddenly there's a little heft here on Easter Sunday afternoon.
So I know there was talk about Archer Shiloff's. Mm-hmm. Can you go to Shiloff's here, or is it got to be DeSmith given the stakes?
Yeah, full off day for them here on Friday. So we're not going to get an answer to that. And with no morning skate on Sunday, it may go right down to warm-up time, essentially, to find out who leads the Canucks out onto the ice. All along, this one just felt like Casey DeSmith played seven straight starts, appeared in 8 since Demko went down. It just felt like the time was right and the opponent was right, but I'm not so sure now. Although Tocchet did say after the morning skate on Thursday that he and Ian Clark had talked, and that, yes, they were going to get Shiloff's into a game here. So maybe that holds. And, you know, if you can't beat the Ducks with I don't know what kind of performance you're going to get from Archer Shiloff's, but he was fine last year in the 5 games. He played in the National Hockey League. But this is, I do think there's a decision now where a win over Dallas was a no-doubt slam dunk Shiloff's on Sunday. I'm not sure that it is as simple as that. And I just want to, let me throw this in here too, guys, about Casey DeSmith, who has given the Canucks a chance to win every game here since he took over from Thatcher Demko. Hasn't given up more than 3 in regulation, gave up 4 to the Colorado Avalanche, the overtime goal on the power play. That said, 3-3-1 since taking over from Demko, the 3 wins against Calgary, against Montreal, against Buffalo, the 3 losses against Washington, against Los Angeles, against Dallas, and against the Avalanche. What do those 4 teams have that the other 3 don't? The 4 teams are above the playoff bar. The 3 teams that DeSmith has beaten are all below the playoff bar. Casey DeSmith has not beaten a team currently in a playoff position since a win in Nashville the week before Christmas. So if the Canucks are going to win the Pacific Division, They still have two to go against Vegas. They've got a game in Los Angeles. They've got a game against Edmonton. Maybe Demko's back for that one. But Casey DeSmith's going to have to author a signature victory here at some point. It's just a numbers game. And if they're going to win the Pacific Division, they're going to need some wins from Casey DeSmith. So he can't be expected to score goals. He certainly can't be expected to run the power play, although maybe he'd be all right in the bumper. Who knows? But you just, like, is it too much to ask your backup goaltender, who's become the de facto starter, to steal you a good win somewhere along the line? That's something that has not happened with Casey DeSmith this season. Check that. But he did in Edmonton early
Edmonton, Game two, Jeff.
Since Christmas.
In the Alberta capital. And here's the other thing. They are going to have another opportunity to play Chelios if they won on Wednesday in Arizona, right? You've got a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, Vegas, Arizona. So maybe that's the spot.
So let me float this one at you, because somebody came at me on social and planted this in my sort of head and hasn't left, that the most important games remaining on the schedule for the Vancouver Canucks are two against Arizona, one against Anaheim, one against Calgary. Like, they need those four wins. What if you play Shilovs in Vegas and throw a bit of a curve to the Golden Knights, a team that you could well see in the first round of the playoffs, and save DeSmith for the game in Arizona, which is back-to-back? Like, that's the one that they cannot afford to slip up against the four minnows, essentially, that remain on their schedule, and then they're going to have to find some other wins. So just some food for thought there, but it wasn't the craziest notion that I had considered.
Nope, not in the least.
Yeah, I just don't, I think that they protect Shilovs a little bit and just not have to go into the fortress, and you know how they get on you there. And I agree that that probably is a game that they're going to want. Jeff, I got to ask you this. There's a handful of games remaining, you know, and you look at the schedule, and this team has just been so checked in and so dialed and so dominant at certain points of this season. Is it fair to say maybe they're just, it's kind of just like waiting for the playoffs now for this group, and every game is not going through the motions? You want to play well, you got to do things, but everyone has that, you know, end of the line or light at the end of the tunnel, which is the playoffs. Maybe guys are a little bit, I don't want to say checked out, but maybe it's just not all there.
I hope not. To me, the dog days are coming out of the All-Star break, where you've spent time, the ones that didn't go to the All-Star game, you've been on a beach, you probably would like to have extended that, you know, by another week. You can't do that. You get back at it, and they had that tough stretch of 10 games and 17 nights out of the All-Star break and kind of hit the wall there. And then this was supposed to be, you know, fuel for their fire. 9 straight at home, put the suitcases away, days off, rest days, practice days, all those types of things. And really through it all, they've kind of barely managed to keep their head above water. And yes, they've been without their starting goaltender. And yes, they've been without their key trade acquisition, but there's enough pieces there that, you know, it is a little troubling to me. Yes, power play is the top priority, but, you know, Brock Besser had 24 goals at Christmas. He's got 13 since. Like, his production has basically dropped in half over the second half. Elias Pettersson, what's he got, 6 goals since the All-Star break, and one of them into an empty net the other night against Buffalo. And, you know, he had the big game against Buffalo, and I think we all thought, like, there it is, he's back, and really hasn't been a whole lot of flash in his game since. So JT Miller has been consistent throughout. Connor Garland, the pass that he makes, the play that he makes there on the only goal the Canucks score. You know, Garland's going, Hoglander's been going, but there just aren't enough guys to the point. And I tweeted this out that, you know, 6 of their 12 forwards last night had 1 or no goals since the All-Star break. Half the forward group. Now, Joshua hasn't played a lot, and Ersti Baines hasn't, but Podkolzin and Bluger and Suter and Mikheyev. Ilya Mikheyev, guys, 1 goal in 41 games. Hockey season is 82 games long. He's on a 2-goal pace over the last 41 games.
So then tell me this, Jeff. Mm-hmm. They need a hero on the wing. We've known this for some time, that most likely to step up and be that hero on the wing.
I'd like to think that Elias Pettersson could make whoever's on his wing that hero, to get him back and playing like he did for, you know, one night only, limited engagement against Buffalo. They need that PD for a run here over the final bunch of games and into the playoffs, obviously. Again, Besser picking up his pace. Now, the power play would go a long way to helping him. I want to see him get to 40. He's at 37. He's close. He got a bounce the other night against the Kings, and he's got time. But you know, ultimately, it's not just going to happen because you want it to happen. Guys have to get out there and make it happen. So when you're looking at scoring heroes, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty select group to try to figure out who's going to come through for them. You know what might help? Quinn Hughes has skated miles on the homestand and tried to make things happen. Philip Peronic, the guy that wants the $8 million, doesn't have a point in the last 10 games for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I heard Ferraro say he thought it was his best game in weeks, though, last night. Did we like Peronic last night to that level?
I mean, 5-on-5, they didn't give up a goal. Like, the effort wasn't terrible. The performance wasn't terrible, but there are special teams involved. They went back to Hughes and Peronic, and you can understand why, trying to juice that offense, but it didn't necessarily work out. The one thing about Peronic that I don't get, guys, is for all the talk of the big heavy shot and NHL Edge backs that up. I mean, he does have one of the best shots on this team. You would think a heavy shot once in a while would beat a goaltender cleanly, but beyond that, would produce some rebounds that a goalie just can't handle. And then there'd be that loose change. And that doesn't seem to happen with Philip. He only has 13 shots on goal through the 8 games of the homestand so far. So for a guy that's billed as having this big shot, I'd like to see him use it a little bit more than he has. So they take contributions from anywhere. It doesn't just have to be the forwards. Peronic's had a nice season, but you know, as the heat sort of gone up around him and all the contract talk and everything else, his performance has sort of faded away here just a little bit. I think there's more for him to give over the final bunch of games.
Marvelous stuff, Jeff. We'll be listening Sunday, Easter Sunday, after the matinee against the Ducks. And no show for us Monday, but we'll talk to you on Tuesday.
All right, guys. Have yourself a happy Easter long weekend, and we'll catch up early next week.
Harrison Price from Wall Center Presentation, Applewood Auto Group. You can text us 778-402-9680. And please join us on Saturday, April 20th between noon and 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, West Broadway in Kitsilano for Bro Do Your Playoffs, a media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason Botchford, presented by Fountain Tire. We're going to go look forward to our city's return to the hockey playoffs the first time in 9 years. Share some memories about our friend Jason. Of course, playoffs are going to start that day. See if the Canucks are on the docket for the late game and Saturday night window. Tickets are $10, available at nationgear.ca. We'll take audience questions. The matinee, our friends are going to perform, and all proceeds are going to BC, the BC Mental Health Foundation. So please do join us there if you can. Time to go to the people, Grady. Close to the people.
To the people. Let's go to those people, shall we?
I have to go to the people. I miss the people there. It's been a long, frustrating time for people here.
To the people we go.
And to the people we go, brought to you by Great Clips, with more than 4,400 hair salons throughout the United States and Canada. Great Clips, the world's largest hair salon brand, the official hair salon of the National Hockey League. Salons locally owned, operated, open 7 days a week. Your time is valuable. Great Clips knows that. Use the Great Clips check-in app. More information, check out greatclips.com. Great Clips. It's going to be great. Okay, so Irf, we're going to start with results to the Tim Hortons poll question from Thursday. If the Canucks have to pay market price for one of their free agents, who should it be? We had Bluger, Roenick, Joshua, Zadorov.
56% of the people said Philip Roenick.
You know, people are screaming bloody murder at the request.
Yeah.
But then when it's time to get down to brass tacks and pay market price, we're voting with Roenick. And we both voted for Roenick, too. He's the most indispensable of that quartet. Did see a lot of this, though, count calling itself Torts Murphy bet. Roenick at market price, not what he's asking for. I think there may be a dissembly between what people think he's asking for and market price. I think lots would be shocked to know that market price is in and around $8 million, any way you slice it.
And their ask is the market price if you're the agent, right? I mean, is Alan Walsh and his camp is going to go to the Canucks and say, here's the paper, here's what we think it is, here's what we believe it is. And the Canucks are going to go, well, no, here's what we really think, and basically there. But, yeah, the interesting one is, for me, it's Joshua too. Like, it, Roenick as a right shot defenseman is a need. Yes. That a desperate, like a need.
That's that a need to do. That is not a nice to do. That's a need to do.
And you can go out and find another Dakota Joshua. I get the size. I get the skill. I get everything. But you need, you can go out and find another one for a lot cheaper than $3 million. Mm-hmm.
Nathan says Joshua and Zadorov over Hronik. Rob follows up and says, if you can sign both Zadorov and Joshua for less than you can sign Hronik, then ship off Hronik for whatever you can recoup for him. We need big physical players that can hit and also play low-scoring playoff-style hockey. Juleson could put up 40 points a year playing with Hughes. I don't know about that.
No, I don't know about that.
Rob. I'm telling you, it's going to be close between Zadorov, Joshua, and what it costs you for Hronik. I think those two guys probably add up to close to $8 million too.
Yep.
Right?
I think that there was another one that I got. Someone said that you should try and get Tanev and Zadorov because that'll cost you less than it will for Roenick. I don't think so. I think Tanev's going to want term.
Well, and the other thing is like
3 years, Chris, 4.6 was APIs.
Chris Tanev is not a Philip Roenick equivalent.
I agree.
He's just not that player anymore, folks. Well, and frankly, he's never been the offensive player that Roenick is. SK, every player deserves market price. So tired of fans expecting players to take discounts just to protect their favorite team's roster. The career spans of a player is short, and ownership and fans have zero loyalty. Each player should do whatever they can to maximize career earnings. I wonder if SK is an agent.
Well, Ferraro would always bang that drum about how just because you take less, are you sure the team is actually going to do right by spending that wisely? Under Jim Benning? Probably not.
Not so much.
Under the new regime, I think, for the most part, you could make a strong argument that, yes, they would.
Seahurst says, I'm telling you, losing Big Z will be the biggest blow to this team. The listening on YouTube says, people overlooking how good Teddy Bluger actually is. This team is so much worse if he isn't in the lineup. And Chester says, is there a better NHL pairing in the NHL than Roenick and Hughes? Arguably, we're not in first place all season without them.
Kale McCarr.
McCarr and Taves.
Taves, yeah.
That would be one of several.
I don't get why.
Oilers fans probably think Bouchard's pair.
Well, I think some Oilers fans would seem to think that maybe not Bouchard's pair too, but I don't get why losing Zadorov would be huge. In all reality, I really don't.
I mean, he's been used as a third pair defenseman.
Yeah.
Literally would be huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's another one I think you can replace him cheaper. You might not get as much size, as much toughness, but there's guys out there. We see it every year, market inefficiencies, guys that, you know, money puck signings you think will get more. Like Pia Suter, for example, was the forward for that last year, right?
Mm-hmm. Puce. Frank Saravelli, exactly. Puce. Frank Saravelli. And this was absolutely news to me, that the Philadelphia Flyers and other American-based NHL teams for kids under a certain age will just outfit you with equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon says, wow, that's a pretty good way to get players engaged. As kids in Philly and in other cities, it's crazy different in Canada. Your parents might start crying if you decide to bankrupt them by becoming a goalie. It would have been nice if Hockey Canada could have used their hush money over the years to actually fund amateur hockey, especially goaltending.
Ooh.
There are so few ice surfaces to train on in Vancouver that not even the Canucks have their own training facility. Yeah, ice sheets in the city of Vancouver proper is absolutely lacking and requires address.
And what do we not have out here that, you know, Alberta, Ontario, Quebec all have? They have the outdoor rinks.
Well,
and a lot of the times too, the city, like when I lived in Toronto, the city of Toronto had it all organized and laid out. You know, you had your free rec skate from this time, and then you had your competitive actual shinny time.
Right.
Organized by age. So, you know, all those hours, so they add up.
Here's the thing. Because Vancouver and the Lower Mainland did not get a lot of naturally frozen sheets for kids to skate, this community was forced to build facilities. Well, two things have happened. Number one, the facilities have gotten older, and there's requirements for more facilities as the population has grown. But secondly, Grady, it's now hard to find outdoor skating, even in, you know, even in some of those colder eastern cities. You used to be able to bank on it in places like Edmonton and Winnipeg and Ottawa and Montreal. Mm-hmm. It's not the same anymore. They have warm stretches in the winter that absolutely destroys those naturally frozen outdoor sheets or makes it very difficult to maintain a backyard or outdoor community rink. So they're in the same boat. They're going to have to start creating facilities as well. But what an awesome program by the Flyers and other NHL teams.
Yeah. Especially at that age, too, where you're not sure if your kid wants to actually play the sport. And before you dish out thousands of dollars on brand new equipment, that's why you sometimes get secondhand. It's, it's fantastic. And, I mean, America, they were trying to build up the popularity of the sport, so it makes
sense. And do we not have programs with where goalie parents and goalies get together and try to help each other out?
Yeah, there's like swap meets, gear meetups that they can, you know, kind of just trade or sell it for discounts.
Brady, you sound like a guy who's gone to a goalie swap.
Pro demo days, they demo all the gear. But to his point, like, I was doing the math yesterday. Brand new gear, high-end gear, easily $6,000.
What?
Yeah.
Six? Oh.
Registration is insane.
Pads, skates, blocker, catcher, helmet, chest protector, pants, sticks. Oh, yeah.
Oh. Okay.
There is cheaper options, of course.
Oh, I would hope so.
You know how minor hockey works. I want the new true stick. I want the new, you know. It's kids get their parents to buy them pieces of equipment that they probably don't need.
Yeah,
I can remember begging for Cooperalls. I kid you not.
So you could slide all over the ice.
And then I got Cooperalls, and I just thought they were amazing. And then I learned, not quite as flexible in the Cooperalls.
Yeah. No.
They're actually not the performance.
Can't push off that stride, get it
right,
extended.
Right. They were not actually the performance garment that the old school pants were. No matter how ugly the pants were, I hated having to do the socks. Oh.
I had a white Titan stick.
Oh,
yeah,
that's boss.
And
Wayne Gretzky? Did Gretzky have the?
No, it wasn't. But he wasn't the white one. It was white with the red writing. Mm. And I remember getting the stick and then going into the room and thinking, you know, you're the kid at 8, 9. I think it was about 9 or 10 years old. But then you got to perform like you have the white stick.
That's right.
Right.
Needless to say, I'm sitting here, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
And
no performance
to that point now. Like one piece composites, high end stuff.
Oh, I know.
400 plus.
I know. Wild.
My goalie stick right now, $450. It's insane.
Jeez.
Oh my God.
I probably didn't need a true hazardous stick, but you know.
Do you use it for roller hockey as well?
No, it's only ice. I actually haven't used it yet. I've been trying to sell it. If anyone wants a brand new true goalie stick, 26-inch paddle, hit me up.
Pardon?
Oh my goodness. Okay, on the power play, BP says, here's my 4D chess in regards to the power play. They are lulling the other teams into a false sense of security, and come playoff time, it goes off. And he says, obviously I'm being facetious, but why else have they stopped using the play where JT skates downhill and blasts from the left circle? Or how many one-timers from EP? Those have been money, and it makes no sense that they've gone away from it. Thoughts, sir?
Well, I think the power play is obviously something that's going to need to be solved here. But, you know, we asked a poll question, you know, the Tim Hortons poll question. Will the power play get fixed before the playoffs? And, you know, obviously people are voting yes and no on it. Farhan Lalji responded to us. It says,
I saw Farhan is...
Farhan's all over us.
Oh, my God. Like, J-Pat, Grady, Farhan, they're all fired up about this. What have we done to get in their kitchen here today?
Crazy we're having this conversation when you have an elite power play quarterback and three potential snipers in brackets, although two of them haven't attempted to snipe much lately. I get it, but when you look at that power play, I know who he's referring to as the elite power play quarterback, and that's Quinn Hughes. The power play runs through JT Miller.
It sure does.
Yeah.
He's your de facto quarterback, 100%. If you will.
He does. He touches the puck every single time. It starts with him on the wall.
Quinn's almost like a wide receiver. Like, you know, occasionally he gets the ball in space and makes a play.
That's 100%.
Well, and he's not getting as many shots off as he used to at the start of the year. And same thing for Pettersson.
Well, they've other teams have adjusted. JT did say the other day, and he sort of buried it in the mid-answer, but he's absolutely right. Other teams have made adjustments.
And teams are now focusing. They're letting Suter have that soft spot because he just doesn't
because
have that one-timer.
They know they're not afraid of that.
Exactly. So they key in on teams. You key in on Miller, you key in on Pettersson, against, especially with these good teams, right? Like, you can beat up on the Buffaloes,
right?
You can beat up on the Calgary, but push comes to shove. Colorado game, 0-3. Last night, they were 0-3. And those other two teams I just listed both had multiple
on the Suter thing. On the Suter thing, you'll be able to watch it all weekend, watch the NC2As. There will be some guys that the opposition is quite content to let shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And that's the same with Pius Suter and the Vancouver Canucks in that bumper spot on the power play. By the way, Farhan's in your kitchen a lot, huh?
Yeah. It's fun, though. Farhan and I have a very good relationship.
Yeah. No, I know, but how often is he?
We talk a lot.
Yeah.
We talk a lot. We were texting yesterday about, he was upset about Dakota Joshua on our Dakota Joshua talk yesterday at Philip Roenick. But, I stick with my point. I think you go with your need as a Vancouver Canuck. You can find another. He said that Dakota Joshua is going to be a top six forward that scores 25 goals. I will be shocked if that happens.
Well, Tockett said he was a 20 goal scorer last year. He thought he could be.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not until you
he's
are.
He's on 13. No, he missed 18 games. So I think, you know, if you project out, I think he would have been all right.
And just because you score it 1 year doesn't mean the old
Ray
Ferraro
rule. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah, 40 goals.
So careful on your Brock Besser next contract projections and if and when he hits 40.
This has been a bang the table week. Farhan, Jeff, Grady. Gordon says, Frygate spoke to every fan who ever felt ripped off from having overpriced arena concessions. It's why it was a big story when a player talked to a staffer after a shot against the glass knocked over a fan's beer. Even a millionaire knows how much that arena beer costs. Yes. Food ain't cheap at the arena, and Frygate has come to a conclusion. She's moved on to chips.
God bless Costco.
D-Stow, another lefty option with a hard shot and a dog-on-a-bone approach with the puck is Podkolzin and maybe Joshua, but Hogs would seem to be the best option. Again, we're back here talking about the power play and the bumper spot. You know, I want Vasily Podkolzin to succeed. I really do. He seems like a pretty good kid. There just has not been a lot of production there. And Blake and Jeff still think that he's got top six potential, at least the last time I checked in with them. Fair enough. I am of the mind that I think we're looking at a bottom six, at best middle six winger who is going to have to make his NHL living by being a secondary scorer and being a scrappy spade work. Physicality type of guy.
And as of right now, his floor is that. Like, he is a bottom six guy at this moment.
Oh, he's not even that right now, Craig.
No.
Like, he's working his way towards
now. I would put him there. He's better than DiGiuseppe. He's better than Amon. Now, if you elevate him up the lineup,
that's a fourth line forward, though.
Right.
Yeah, so.
But you need those guys come playoff time.
No, fair enough.
But the point is, he's not a top six guy.
No, that's fair.
And I agree with Matt. I just don't see it. I think if he was, or the potential was for him to be a top six guy,
the clock is
ticking. Why are they wasting him in that? Why is he playing in Abbotsford so much?
Yeah.
Why is he not up here?
Well, to get him more ice time and get his confidence up.
Fair enough. And that's fair. And I don't dispute there are some guys who are.
I mean, remember
bloomers.
Too, he didn't have a lot of reps through his junior career in Russia,
right?
Fair enough. He needed to get that ample ice time.
Fair enough. I mean,
he had 12 and. He had 14 goals and 12 assists in 21-22 season.
Yeah,
it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think he lost it a little bit. He played 39 games the next year, went four goals.
Exactly. Not always linear, though.
No, you're right.
No, but he's got 8 points in his last 50 NHL. Like,
no,
we're
it's
in Brendan
concerning.
Gaunt's territory.
It is, and especially if you look around the guys who were selected in that draft, like Caulfield.
And the other thing is, he's going to be 23 years old here in a few months.
Yeah, his draft was. His eons ago.
2019 was the draft. And that's the other thing. We're asking these kids to make their impression sooner and sooner now, huh? Yeah. Used to be able to wait on a guy 4 or 5 years. Now, oh man, if he's not doing it within 4 or 5 years, you got problems.
You know
now
why? The flip because it's because of the money in your contracts, yeah. right? You want your young guys to be able to come in and perform right away on their ELCs right. and all that before you have to pay them. And,
right.
But the flip side to that is he could be cheap depth here when they have to re-sign him. Mm-hmm. That's not the worst thing going forward.
Okay, but you
expect more out of where he was selected.
Okay, so are we saying cheap depth or cheap top six guy? Because if it's depth, okay, it's cheap, but he's not going to be a top six guy. I just can't see it happening. And I think that he's realized
still
it.
Could be.
But the way that he's playing, I think he's realized it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why he's been so aggressive, because he knows he has to do that in order to stay in the lineup.
There you go.
What I can see is that he finds a niche playing on a scoring line as the guy doing the grunt work, kind of like what DiGiuseppe did for Miller and Besser earlier in the season. Now, I do think he's going to be wind up being a better player than DiGiuseppe. Certainly has more upside, I think, than DiGiuseppe. But if he turned into that style of guy, and I don't mean a guy who did it for 8 to 10 games and then got shuffled down the lineup, but a guy who does it more routinely, more consistently, I mean, at this stage of the game, I think that would be a good outcome for the Vancouver Canucks. And if he's not that guy, then be a dog on the bone, forechecker, good defensive third line winger. That would be a good outcome, I think. For the Vancouver Canucks at this point. I
think they'll be upgrading a top six winger in the offseason here. So
for sure.
It's not like he's going to have that open roster spot like DiGiuseppe did at points of the season.
It is a gaping, glaring need, that top six winger spot. And they know it. I mean, they pursued Gensel. They weren't done with Lindholm. They knew they needed more, and it didn't come to pass. Here's Gordon on the NHL playoff schedule. Says, I thought it was bad when the NHL playoffs were still going on June 2nd, but having the possibility of the Cup Finals still on as late as June 24th? Ridiculous. When it's being done for the benefit of American television stations that don't really like hockey that much to begin with. It's even more stupid when we realize the entry draft happens on June 28th. This message with hockey fans' ability to enjoy their summer and still watch the playoffs. I've said it for years. Like, in this country, in many of the population centers, you get pretty crappy weather for most of hockey season. Come the playoffs, the weather's improving. That's what you're competing against. Mm-hmm. Try and wrap it up a little sooner than actually into summer. We go past, you could go past June 20th to 21st this year, Irv, actually into summer.
Shorten the season.
The Stanley Cup. Oh, God, I would love to shorten the season. Anything else you think we have to get to here? Grady?
No.
Okay.
We've ranted long enough.
Yeah, exactly. That was a pretty good rant.
More so there. Myself, but
let's get to errors and omissions from yesterday's program, Thursday's program, and beyond. And buddy, I don't have an error.
Oh, I have one on you.
Oh boy.
Talking here to Frank and even PJ too, according to a commentator, you mentioned unrestricted free agents, and you looped in Philip Hronek into that group, which he is not.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
It's conceivable.
Yeah.
It's conceivable.
Free agents.
Right. Free agents.
And, of course, people are reminding us in the comments about that. How do you guys not know that? You do this for a living.
Believe you me, I know it. Misspeak.
It happens.
Oh, especially when you speak as much as I do.
Yep.
Okay, Eastern Oaks brought to you by our friends at Neighborhood Brewing, Yellow Dog Brewing, Yellow Dog Spirits, Foolish Winery. And Yellow Dog Brewing, Neighborhood, and Yellow Dog Spirits are all going to be attending this year's Sunshine Coast Beer Festival hosted at Gibson's Public Market. This is a fundraiser event for the Gibson's Community Building Society. Grab your ticket. Come join Saturday, April 6th for beers, food, live music, and more. Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to this podcast, Rinkwide Vancouver, Canucks Conversation, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on social, that's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And, of course, support the community sponsors you hear us talking about. Thanks for this week, Irv. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Keep it local.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.